Listeners, you may not remember what this podcast is. The Rules in the Dark Digest with me, Trish Lambert, co-host, along with Laura Burkholz. Hi, Laura.
Hello.
Well, the good news is we're not terribly far behind. I mean, today we're talking about Riddle 2.08, and I think we've live broadcast up to 2.12, and 2.10 and 2.11 aren't even up on iTunes yet. So we're not too far behind. We're not too bad. Well, so we had quite a bit of feedback, didn't we, on this?
We did. Mm-hmm. We did.
All right. I'm going to read the riddle, and I think let's just jump right into feedback, and you and I can sort of comment as we go. Riddle 2.08, how will The Hobbit Desolation of Smaug begin? And our choices are A, action continues in real time, either with the company or somewhere else. B, return to the frame narrative of old Bilbo at Bag End. C, a flashback. D, exposition. E, none of the above. So there's a little bit of, I mean, you know, if we're splitting hairs, I suppose somebody could call B, the return to frame narrative, and D, exposition to be the same, but there
it's
is
a little different. Yeah, it's a little different. Exposition was like what Galadriel did at the beginning of the first Lord of the Rings movie.
Right. And they're referring to frame narrative. Specifically, it's Bilbo. Specifically, we know he's at Bag End like he was in Unexpected Journey. And, I mean, I will finally fudge and say, you know, the judge's word is final, so they'll be able to figure all this out.
Yeah. What did you say for that, Trish?
Remember, I need to go over and take a look at this. I can't remember what, you know, this is the other thing. It's been so long now.
I thought you said A, but I'm not positive.
I did, yeah. I was thinking it was good. And the reason I said A was because in one of Jackson's films, you know, one of his, it wasn't a video log, it was something else. It shows the company behind a green screen, but it's obviously the Carrick, like they're coming down the Carrick at a fairly good pace. And I just, myself, that's probably the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
Although it doesn't have to be. I mean,
it doesn't have to be. Well, and I said B, not because I think that's what they're going to do, but that's because that's what I would like them to do, because I would love it if they would show Bilbo talking to the children in Hobbiton, just to remind everyone that this is actually a children's book written for children. But they're not going to do that because they already did it in the Lord of the Rings movies, so they're probably not going to do that. And I don't think the old Bilbo actor is going to be in this one.
Ian Holm will be in this one?
Yeah, I thought that he was just in the first one, but I could be wrong about that. Anyway, I'm going to say B. I'm going to go with what I would like.
Because we have a full spread then, because Corey went with C and Dave went with D.
Oh, well, then nobody has a real good idea. No. So I think that they're going to go with what I really think will happen is that it's going to be something dragon focused. I think they're going to show Smaug at the beginning of the movie, but that's not what I want to happen. I want it to be old Bilbo at Bag End. So
the listeners are going with C, and I think it probably has to do with Corey's silver-tongued oration during the episode. I can't remember what it was. I mean, he's always very persuasive about his story.
He is.
So the Facebook, the Riddle of the Dark prediction aggregate or winning answer is C, a flashback. So we'll see how this goes. I don't know. I mean, I think it could be any. I think all of these are possible. Obviously, I mean, it just B, though I'd like to have it happen, I think is the least likely. Although I still could see it. I still could see it. It's just, I don't know. I mean, I don't even know that we necessarily should go by the way Jackson did Lord of the Rings beginnings. It's like it's not set a pattern. In fact, knowing Jackson, if he set a pattern Lord of the Rings, he'd probably want to do something different. So anyway,
sure.
Let's jump into what folks are saying. I know we heard from Mark Fisher at Encyclopedia of Arda.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, let's see. Yeah, you go ahead and read, Mark.
Okay.
Or do I read?
I can read Mark. It doesn't matter. I can do it. So Mark Fisher from the Encyclopedia of Arda says, it seems to me that Peter Jackson is playing up the basic similarity of structure between The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. I'm not sure to what extent that's intentional or whether it's just enforced by the stories themselves, but it's hard not to notice that the first film in each trilogy follows the same basic pattern. An opening monologue setting the scene, A hobbit and his companions set out on an unplanned journey. They make their way to Rivendell. They're troubled by goblins under the mountain. They survive another attack by orcs. And finally, the movie ends with characters staring off at a distant mountain that's the ultimate goal of the quest. It's rather implausible that in either case, they'd even be able to see the mountain in question, of course, but the parallel is hard to miss. Assuming the films follow the same basic pattern, which is quite an assumption, but I don't have much else to go on, then I suppose we can expect something more or less equivalent to Gandalf's fight with the Balrog, with the film immediately leaping to action that it's at least close to the timeline of the main narrative. I'm not sure what this would be. We never found out what happened to Radagast, so maybe some kind of action in Dol Guldur. The details aside, that would be near contemporaneous with the main narrative. So I think A is the closest of your options.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, actually, it's not even just the films that follow. I mean, The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, in terms of broad story components and flow, is the same. I mean, it is the same. You know, it's like starts off at Bag End. They stop through Rivendell. They have adventures on the way to Rivendell. They stop at Rivendell. They have, you know, issues in the mountains. I mean, on through to a king, you know, getting his kingdom back. I mean, I think I even said that one time in one of the classes I had, you know, was actually Hobbit. The Hobbit is the Lord of the Rings in miniature, really, in terms of the story, you know, the story flow. But yeah, I mean, it is for Jackson, whether he's done it unconsciously or not, it's kind of been similar.
It's not his fault because they are similar. Well, even down to Trouble in the Shire when they get back, you know.
That's right.
Yeah. We won't say what it is in case nobody has read The Hobbit. But
right.
But we'll see if Jackson includes that this time.
It'd be interesting it'd be interesting because he didn't do it last time, really.
Yeah.
Anyway, so at least I have the comfort of having the same answer as Mark Fisher for this riddle.
Yes. And what do the other analysts say?
Oh, let's see. Do we have, you know, I think our analysts are suffering from analyst fatigue. Let's see. Mark Fisher, Arwen Kester says D, which is she agrees with Dave Kale. And Lillian Oloriel of Words of the Westfold say D. Interesting.
Oh, okay.
And then C for the Facebook folks. So those are the folks that have answered. And so they're taking the Dave Kale road on this one.
Oh, okay. So Dave Kale's silver tongue has influenced them.
Yes, yeah, influenced them. Which is exposition. Well, I don't know. It's probably because that seems to be – Jackson seems to have done that more often than anything, really, right? Well, let's see. No, because you're right. The Two Towers started off with the fight with the Balrog.
Yeah.
So I guess a parallel to that would be, you know, the fight with Azog at the fir trees, or something like that. And then Return of the King was the story of Sméagol and Déagol. So that really wasn't exposition. That was really a flashback.
Flashback. Yeah. So he's done everything. He's done B, C, and D, but he's never done A.
So he's never done A. Yeah, that's right. And so
this
that
could
be
the first time.
He just won't. Well, he's not a person that believes in it. No.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right. Well, let's go on to what people were saying on Facebook. And Ian Pollitt says, I wanted to start in real time with an explanation of the eagles. The dwarves could be grumpily climbing down the Kerak and Gloin grumbling, why couldn't those darn eagles have dropped us at the bottom of the rock or just flown us to the mountain for that matter? To which Gandalf replies, the eagles of Middle-earth are not your personal taxi service, Master Dwarf. The eagles will not take us anywhere near where men live. They would shoot at them with their arrows, for they think they were after their sheep. And at other times, they would be right. It'd be a little cheesy, but it'd be a nice nod to all the people who've questioned the eagles. You know, that would be cute.
A little bit of dialogue from the book, yeah.
Yeah, that would be cute. Yeah. I hope that Gandalf says that at some point, not necessarily at the beginning.
So yeah.
I guess that would be A for him. Then Erica Smith says, I think primarily because of this last season of Doctor Who, where every single episode started in the middle of the action and then suffered greatly from lack of character development because of it, I'm resistant against the action continuing in real time. And I feel if they return to the frame narrative, they'd have a flashback before that. But then when you have Ian McKellen to narrate something, you give him something to narrate, which would make it exposition instead of a flashback. I'm thinking we're going to see Gandalf, Thrain, Mapke flashback, but also if they leave the Beorn torturing orc scene in, wouldn't that have to be before they are in Beorn's house? Actually, I don't think it does, because that happens after they show up at Beorn's house.
Yeah, and that in the night they spend there.
Yeah, then that could be considered either flashback or action continuing in real time, depending on how they frame it. Gandalf, Thrain, Mapke, flashback. You know, there's a lot of interesting flashbacks they can have. There's a lot of backstory that they could flashback to.
Yeah. Well, and especially, I mean, I could see that being a flashback for movie two if Thrain is actually going to have more of a story. You know, we're going to see Thrain in one way.
Well, yeah.
Idea was that the one where he's jumping down on top of Gandalf in the trailer, he looks way younger. I mean, he looks, you know, as I recall, his hair is like dark and he's got, I think he might have both. No, he doesn't have both eyes. He wouldn't have had both eyes. But anyway, something. It didn't seem like he was decrepit, Thrain. It seems like he was a younger,
more he's
paler.
Like leaping off a.
Yeah.
Maybe he's a Zom dwarf.
A Zom dwarf. A whole new thing.
Yeah, that would be a good flashback. I want to cast my vote for that being a good flashback, because unlike a dragon flashback, that actually gives some depth to the characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
And we really didn't get a lot of Thrain, you know, even in the flashback, even in the beginning of Unexpected Journey, it was mostly Thror and Thorin. You know, we didn't really get a lot of Thrain other than, you know, seeing him carried out, you know, or limping out with his son, you know, and then talking about him at the Battle of Azanulbazar. But there really wasn't other than what is it? Thorin, is it Thorin's thinking he's dead or Thorin's thinking he's alive? I can't remember which. Oh, and the throwaway line that the Goblin King, was it the Goblin King? Oh, no, Azog does at the end, which I think you and I talked about. He talked in Orcish, so how could Thorin possibly understand what he was saying? But he says, you know, your father was a coward, or something like that.
Smelt of fear,
yeah. So I always thought that was kind of a setup for there being more Thrain in scene in movie two, and a flashback to the key thing with Gandalf could be. I'm hoping we see that, because I just still am intimidated by Thrain saying, "Where'd you get the key?" And Gandalf says, "From your dad." And he goes, "Oh, okay,
sure. No problem." Sure. I remember you were over our house all the time. You must have given it to you.
Yeah. And nothing like, it should be my key. You know, why didn't he give it to me? It's Mike. You know what I mean? It's like he didn't even question it. So yeah. I'm hoping we get a little more.
Well, Stephen Johnson brings up an issue with our idea of their idea of the flashback, that scene being a flashback to Dol Guldur. For the film 2 intro, I seriously like the idea of a flashback of Gandalf finding Thrain and getting the map and the key. However, it could not be at Dol Guldur, as obviously the G-Man has not been there yet per film 1. I'm not sure where it could be. Maybe Gandalf finds him on the Green Road south of Bree while he is on his way to Hobbiton, where he will meet Bilbo as a kid. Maybe not, but it is fun. I additionally like the idea of Gandalf meeting Thorin at Bree for the opening of film 3, or at least a flashback within film 3. It may be better placed just before Thorin attempts to toss Bilbo off of the Lonely Mountain.
Well, the whole thing, I mean, I think we've talked about this before, I know I have, that being with Thrain that I'm holding out for could not be happening at Dol Guldur for the very reason Stephen says, you know, because it's been made clear that Gandalf hasn't been there yet, right?
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that there wasn't a meeting of Thrain. I mean, I'm still of the opinion that Thrain, that the reason that Thrain wouldn't have given it to Thorin, although Thor was alive at the time, so that doesn't, well, anyways, I'm going to go ahead with my thought. Thor was alive at the time, so it doesn't make any sense that Thrain would have had the key, but my thought is that Gandalf would have gotten the key before the Battle of Azanulbazar, because here they are going into battle.
Yes.
It's not known who's going to remain alive, why give it to his son? His son's going in. His son may not survive. So I could see there being a specifically on-purpose meeting of Thrain and Gandalf, you know, where somehow Thrain has put the word out to Gandalf and given him the key and the map saying, if we don't survive, you know. That, to me, makes sense. I haven't had a lot of supporters for that idea so far, but, I mean, that's the kind of timing in Jackson's alternate universe I could see.
Yeah, Peter Jackson has, you know, made things a little complicated for himself with some of this timing. We'll see how he's going to resolve it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Also, the fact that, you know, we can't have Gandalf already knowing, you know, as in the book, with Gandalf already knowing the Necromancer is Sauron, Gandalf's already been to Dol Guldur, you know, all that stuff. Jackson hasn't allowed any of that, which then he's got to explain. This is another thing that makes me really appreciate Tolkien's writings. I mean, Tom Bombadil is another one, which, of course, we don't want to go off on that tangent, but actually, I actually wrote a paper in one of my classes about this. You know, Tom Bombadil is not a throwaway character in Lord of the Rings, and none of Tolkien writes. I mean, everything is so well dovetailed together that if you take away a character, if you take away Tom Bombadil, or if you take away the whole trip that they take to see Tom Bombadil, you take away their source of their weapons.
They
take it to battle, you know, as an example.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, Merry being able to wound the Witch King with his sword.
Right.
You know, he found that in the Barrow Downs.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, that was a special sword. It wasn't just any old sword. Because otherwise, him stabbing the Witch King and having it do anything doesn't make any sense.
That's right. I mean, there's no legacy. I mean, and Tolkien says, and it's just a wonderful poetic thing of if the smith from Carn Dûm had known, you know, that centuries hence this would be the weapon that would, you know, be the ending of his arch enemy, he would have been thrilled. That's not how Tolkien said it, but and then the other thing is you know, there's a couple other things. Is Bombadil, at least in the book, provides us with some background to the Witch King's domain, you know, some history, which no other character is really positioned to do that. You know, there's no other character that you could actually give that to if Tolkien took Bombadil out. And then the Old Forest, you know, you kind of get a little bit of a foreshadowing of Treebeard and the Ents and the Horns, you know, with Old Man Willow. So that's just one example. And I think the same is true in The Hobbit. You know, Tolkien just dovetails everything. So he's just a master woodworker. You know what I mean? It's like everything is so well together that when you start to play with the timeline and with leaving characters in and out, you mess up other pieces of the story, and then it becomes then you almost do it an alternate universe. I think Jackson has to because you know,
which he's a you know it, I mean the movie is not the book. You know, we have to be clear about that. It's based on the book, but it's a different story with different emphasis. It doesn't mean it can't be a good story. It's just.
J.J. Abrams for, you know, creating Star Trek, the new Star Trek franchise as an alternate universe, because I can now get my head around, you know, they completely reset the Star Trek, you know, they completely rebooted Star. Okay, well, so Jackson's kind of doing that with Middle Earth, you know, this is sort of an alternate universe, Middle Earth.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so let's go on. Wayne Napier says, this is going to be a flashback. Two girls find a doll on the streets of Dale. They fight over who's going to keep it. The blonde girl claims it as her birthday gift, but the other girl wins and runs off with the doll. Cut. The blonde girl stands on the mountainside and looks down on Dale, her eyes full of contempt. She speaks only one word, Dracarys, which must be a Game of Thrones reference, which Trish and I both have a confession to make that we are not fans of Game of Thrones. So you can send your hate mail to Dave Kale on that one.
Dave, he
likes Game of Thrones. Yes, he does.
He's a big Game of Thrones fan.
Yeah.
So there you go. And somebody could do a paper now on, you know, what that says about Laura and Trish and Dave, you know, their psychologies based on their, you know, their
Well, I don't like it, and I haven't even read it yet. So
Well, I've read it. I've read the first book, and I didn't like it. And there's no indication that it gets any better after, in terms of the things I don't like about the first book. I think the stuff I don't like just gets more in the, you know, because it's the very stuff I don't like is the very stuff that fans like about it. So, I'm a Peter Dinklage fan. I will say that, you know, so I'm glad that this has been a really, you know, a huge honey fall for him. But other than that,
I think
we'll let Dave hold the ground on.
We'll let him be the expert on that. Okay, Caitlin DeMarco, I'm putting my vote in for a flashback to the Witch King's downfall and apparent imprisonment by Eanor and Glorfindel at Carn Dûm, because that would be awesome.
I agree, Glorfindel.
Awesome, Glorfindel needs his day in the sun. He needs his moment on screen. And what better to show him?
If Jackson doesn't do this, then someone needs to do a fan movie.
They do. Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah, we'll dress up and we'll do it.
We'll
LARP it.
Really blonde dude. Really hunky blonde dude to be Glorfindel with long hair.
All right. And Jope Ebbing says, I think it will start with a flashback to Thrain giving the map and key to Gandalf. I saw in an interview that they wanted to put the scene in the prologue of film one, but it did not work in there. Oh, yeah, that's right. I think I did read that somewhere. So, yeah, that seems to be what a lot of people want to have shown. Yeah. So
it's interesting that a lot of us really do feel like that's sort of a missing puzzle piece, is Gandalf getting the key and map from Thrain. I'd love to see that. I think that'd be great.
Yeah.
Well, Jared actually agrees too, right?
He does. He says, I think with seeing Thrain and Dol Guldur and tying Bolg into the action, we will see something before the Battle of Azanul's Bazaar and something more from the battle. Bolg might be a lost cause here. I don't know.
Yeah, I think we said this in an episode, or I mentioned it a couple episodes ago to Dave and Corey, is that somebody else I think pointed out to me, but at Comic-Con in San Diego this year, in the Weta Workshop booth, there was something of Bolg. I don't know if it was a picture or a figurine or whatever, but it was not titled Bolg. It was titled a Gundabad Orc.
Yeah, I think Bolg might be.
Which to us makes us think that Bolg's not going to be actually named. Now, from a story standpoint, because Jackson's kept Azog alive, I get it. You know, I get it. Because you can't, it's like, what are you going to do with Bolg? But I'm kind of bummed. I mean, it's like, gee, I wish then if he was going to pick one or the other, then get, you know, don't bring Azog back to life and stick closer to the story and have Bolg be the one who's after Thorne from the get-go. But that ship has already sailed, so.
Yeah, I think that was probably a very late change that they didn't have time to redo. So,
and said, if that toy set of Bolg and Gandalf is still for sale on Amazon, you know, and you're anywhere close to a collector, snap that baby up. And if you have a way of getting a hold of that movie poster that Bolg was in last year, then get a copy, because those will be collector's items.
That's right. Bolg could end up being oh my goodness, what's the guy in Star Wars?
Yeah, oh gosh.
Boba Fett. Bolg could be the Boba Fett of the Hobbit toys.
That's right. Absolutely. So let's see. Right. Oh my gosh, Philip, go ahead and read.
Oh, we have still a lot. Philip Mendez, I have a soft spot for the Frame story. Movie one was described by Bilbo as including the bits he had not told before, and I don't feel like we have got to the end of that. There's more for him to tell, and I have a feeling that what he has never told anyone is about the malevolent nature of the ring. I would like the focus of the prologue to be on the Red Book of Westmarch, a theme that is in the Lord of the Rings movies. This is how I would do it. Movie one showed Bilbo starting the book, which is also shown in Fellowship of the Ring.
Extended edition.
Yeah. I don't work for the government, so I have problems with acronyms. It's his introduction concerning hobbits, which surely happens after the prologue in Unexpected Journey. That Anne always throws me off. Because I don't expect Anne to be part of that.
That's right. That's right. A-U-J.
But effectively, this part of the story has gone as far as it can, because Frodo goes off to wait for Gandalf to arrive for the party. And then we run into the beginning of Fellowship of the Ring. Movie two would start in Rivendell, Fellowship of the Ring, when Bilbo is showing Frodo the book, and add a recount flashback to Thrain, or the map and key, or any other important backstory information. So I'm not going to talk about movie three, because we're not talking about that yet. So, but he says the Frame story needs to be the bookends, and the movie makers need to remind the audience that Bilbo is telling the story at the beginning of each movie. Otherwise, the Frame story movie one becomes pure indulgence, bringing back the old actors from the first movies and nothing more. I rest my case. Well, we'll see. We'll see. I think bringing the actors back is a bit of indulgence, but it's indulgence that everyone likes. So
I think I like the idea of actually having the sort of the writing of the book, you know, now showing up in Rivendell. But the thing is, the only thing I have against that is we have not seen any kind of indication that Ian Holm, you know, there's been no filming of Ian Holm and the Rivendell set, it's always been Bag End where we've seen the old Bilbo.
Yeah,
and,
I don't
you
think
know,
that,
while something I don't like think that can be kept that. Secret, I just, yeah, I don't, I mean, I think it'd be a great thing to do, but it'd be nice. I agree. I mean, it'd be fun to, it, I think that'd be great. But they do talk about, at least I know Elijah Wood has talked about Frodo being bookends.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming that means both Frodo and old Bilbo will be at the very beginning and the very end of
yeah.
you know, the trilogy. But
yeah, and I don't think they would flashback ahead to something that's in the middle of Lord of the Rings, because this is supposed to be a prologue. So
yeah,
Bilbo
yeah.
and Rivendell is something that happens after the beginning of the Lord of the Rings movies. So I don't think that. But we'll see. We'll see. Okay, now from the Mythgard page, Jonathan Fisher. I am going with D. The reason for it is that since the first movie came out, I have found that in many books about the movies, there is some indication that there is going to be the long-expected party. There are photos out there that Gandalf is standing on a box with little hobbits around him and fireworks everywhere. Therefore, I believe Bilbo may have some input about telling the story, but not much. So I believe, even though I love the idea about Thrain and the tent, that the troublemakers Meriodiac and Peregrine will make the dragon explode, the dragon soars into the night sky, and the titles come up, bringing us back down to the journey of the doors on the ground. So I'm going with D. Oh, I didn't know there were photos out there with Gandalf standing on a box with little hobbits around him.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that in one of the films. But I actually think that we're going to see that in the extended edition of the first movie.
Okay.
Because Jackson has told us that we're going to see more of Hobbiton.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
And I also know that if you do you remember that Ian McKellen shared that there was they actually did shoot a scene of him meeting, of seeing Belladonna and meeting Bilbo as a child.
Yeah, yeah. I was gonna say, and is that in the extended edition?
Jackson hasn't said it, but I'm holding out that it will be, and yeah. It may very well be at this party where the little hobbit children are running around him and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. That would be neat. I'm looking forward to the extended edition. Okay, Yana. Says, all right, here's how the movie should start. Just like the Two Towers, we'll see a dark, fiery figure in the form of a doll of the heir of Durin. The doll's owner will be picked up by the soldier to be smuggled out of Dale. Yana's a big doll fan, by the way. Screaming
oh,
for the soldier to get her doll back. Then a big claw will pick up the doll and bring it to the Lonely Mountain. With all of this leading up, of course, to Bilbo stealing one of Smaug's most valuable treasures, namely the long-lost doll of Dale. The cup rumors were later created in the Red Book to make it seem more plausible.
Yana.
Another good start would be, again, opening on the doll and it being picked up by the soldier and eventually given to the Elven King as a great relic to the House of Geryon as a token for their appreciation. It will be stolen by one of the dwarves during their escape, and that will be Thranduil's provocation to march on Erebor in full force.
Oh, my.
Okay. Now, these options are, of course, entirely plausible and fantastic story ideas with great potential to be a fantastic film. However, unfortunately, Peter Jackson has no direct window in my imagination and does, unfortunately, not work to serve my every wish. If so, these movies would look very different. Now, on how I think they'll actually begin this one. My guess is the company will be chased by an unseen foe right into Beorn's Hall. When the door closes after they enter, we will get a look at their fearsome foe in the shape of a huge bee swarm. This does not only fit with what we've seen in the preview, it also references to something in the book. This would be a very different opening to get the movie going right off the bat. They will, of course, be chased by a different foe. The orc pack has been suggested. Now, I don't think this to be very likely, since I don't see those being stopped by simple walls, and I get the impression they're safe in the house. This would naturally be an A answer for me this time. I am, however, still holding out for my doll theory, and unless it's directly contradicted on screen, I will hold this belief till the day I die. Just like I still believe the moth that came to Gandalf on Orthanc was sent by Radagast, since this helps me like the movies a little bit better. To summarize my answer A, we will see a direct in-timeline continuation of the company being chased into Beorn's halls by probably bees.
You know, I'm really sad that apparently this bee chasing is not going to be. I mean, I think that's a way better than what we've now seen, which is, you know, a big bear, presumably Bjorn, chasing them into Bjorn's Hall, which I still, I don't like that because, you know, Bjorn chasing them into his own hall does not make sense to me.
No, it doesn't.
You know, Corey and Dave both disagree with me. Because I say, okay, now we do see that it's a bear because we see that in whatever movie we saw, you know, trailer we saw that in. But I'm thinking it could be one of Bjorn's, like, sentry
maybe
bears,
it's just a bear. Maybe it's not Bjorn himself.
Yeah, I said it could be Bjorn's sentry bear. And then Bjorn could be actually standing in the hall saying something like, this is what happens when people come uninvited. But they both disagree with me because it's such a huge bear. It can't be anybody but Bjorn. And I don't agree. I mean, I think it could be another bear.
Well, grizzly bears are gigantic. Anyway,
they're huge.
Yeah.
So, and okay, you know, and Corey has at least acknowledged the fact that it is, that it can be, it's going to, if it actually is Bjorn that chases them into his hall, which again, I can't imagine why he would do that, but then it makes it a little bit awkward. When Bjorn then shows up as a man, and it's like, sorry about that. You know what I mean? It's like, where do you go with the conversation after that? So, I mean, I'm hoping that it turns out the people who are – the other thing is people are making assumptions. I mean, you know, it's like everybody's like, oh, well, that's Bjorn. Well, based on what are you what are you basing it on, your assumption is Bjorn? Because as soon as you assume Bjorn, then a whole lot of other assumptions come out of that. But your baseline assumption could be wrong. Why are you so convinced? And there's a couple of, you know, I can't remember off the top of my head. I can't think of them now. But there's some others that are like that where people go, well, it's obviously X. And then from that, and what I mean by that is, like, everybody, you know, like on Facebook, everybody's saying, well, it's obviously this. Not necessarily, you know. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I don't have a basis. I can't really refute it being Bjorn, you know, mainly because it's such a short clip. But logically, and, you know, oh, well, he's so big, it must be Bjorn. Well, I don't really have an answer for that. I mean, I don't know therefore thing.
It could
be just
a real big bear, you know.
I think it could be
the wargs are gigantic.
Huge, yeah. I mean, why wouldn't Bjorn, with all the trouble that's going on, why wouldn't he have his bears, you know?
Well, also, if the hobbits, or I keep saying hobbits, if the dwarves were being chased by orcs, why wouldn't Bjorn be chasing the orcs? Why would he attack a bunch of dwarves and wizard and a hobbit? You know, I mean, Bjorn is smart enough to know. I mean, he there are men around that he doesn't attack. Why would he be attacking them and not the orcs?
Why I like the idea of a swarm of bees. You know, it's kind of random, you know, and it's totally like Bjorn definitely has bees, you know? I mean, that's no question there. And I just thought it would be awesome for it to be a swarm of bees, you know, that, like, and then they take shelter, you know, frantically at the closest place they can take, which is run into this room.
And Bjorn's upset because he's
they're
in the house.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not only that, but mad at him because they angered his bees. Or, you know, again, it could be that are patrolling, you know, they're specifically meant to keep out intruders.
Or maybe,
anyway,
maybe he heard Bilbo say something about a furrier.
That could be what pisses the bear off, whether Bjorn or not. Well, you and I will have to sit next to each other at the movie. So,
oh yeah,
you know,
we'll high five when it's when.
Yeah, we'll high. You know, we'll have to have our little cards in front of us of all the answers that we gave.
That's right.
But yeah, I just think, I'm not saying it's absolutely definitively not Bjorn. I just don't get how it could be. It's going to be interesting. If it is Bjorn, I'm going to be interesting to see how Jackson deals with that because.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, now you've got this host who's just chased you into his front door, you know, his living room, you know, who's grumpy.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was Bjorn, I wouldn't be chasing him into my living room. I'd be chasing him away from where I live if I didn't want to deal with him. So anyway, we'll see.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Is that it?
I think that's it. We got a lot of feedback on this one. So, all right.
Okay, now we're going to switch gears here because our conundrum has nothing to do with Bjorn.
It has nothing to do with Bjorn. Well, no, nothing to do with Bjorn. Our conundrum is, will Smaug, and I hope I said that right, because I know once in a while I say smog, but I mean Smaug. So that's my Midwestern accent coming out.
There you go.
Smaug. Appear on screen in the first 5 minutes of the movie. So not necessarily in the very beginning, you know, But will we see the dragon? Will we see the dragon at the beginning?
Part of the, it doesn't even have to even be the whole dragon. Like we did, you know, like in the first film, we saw his tail and his legs. I mean, it's just some part of Smaug be visible on screen in the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Yes, and his fire counts too. If he's just, you know, torching something.
That's right. What do you think? Actually, you know, we designed the question that I never really thought about what my answer was going to be. What do you think?
I think we will.
You think so?
I think we will see him. Yeah, because we have to be reminded of the quest, and the quest is to meet the dragon. So a little bit of excitement for Smaug in the first few minutes. I think so.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point that we have to be reminded. Because I was thinking of where we are in the story in terms of, like, we've talked about the Thrine Key thing, and we've talked about the, you know, which I think there's going to have to be, and we stipulated it in such a way that could be at the very beginning. I mean, it still could be the very beginning. We still could see Smaug in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah. The Thrine Key thing would be great, but I actually don't think, I mean, I think it would be great for character development. But I think they're going to go for, you know, action over character development probably.
Yeah,
so
yeah. I mean, it still could be somewhere in the movie. I mean, Balin could even tell the story, but it may not. It probably won't be the beginning. And the other thing about our conundrum is we're not saying that Smaug figures in the opening scene. We want to be clear about that. We're simply saying that somewhere in the first 5 minutes of the film, some part of him's going to show up. Okay. And I agree with you. I think, yes, I think it's probable that he will.
We'll have to be there with our stopwatches to click off
in
5 minutes. At 5:01, if Smaug shows up, it doesn't count.
We'll have to wait until the video comes out, you know, until it comes out on Blu-ray to actually have the timer to know the first 5 minutes. Well, again, the judges can decide, you know, how much they want to fudge that. I mean, obviously, we're talking about, you know, in the beginning moments of the film, but not necessarily the opening scene.
Yes, yes. So, what do you think, Trish?
I think he will. I think he will also. I mean, I think some piece of him will. I mean, it may be literally a very short something. But we could see him in flight over Dale, or we could see, you know, but I just think you're right. I think we have to find it.
Yeah, we need the big fiery monster for sure.
I don't think that the opening of the movie is going to be a Smaug scene, but it could, I mean, it could be. I mean, we ended with Smaug's eye, right?
Yeah.
It could be. That I suppose could have been our conundrum, but I just don't think it's going to be, but I do think we'll see some Smaug body part or fire in the first few films.
Yeah. Yep.
So.
All right.
I mean, that it is, after all, the Desolation of Smaug.
That's right. That's right. He is the titular character.
That's right.
So.
Okay, so that is it.
That is it.
Do we have time for anything else? I guess we took a lot of time.
We do have a little time. So.
Yeah.
Do we have a Trish's rant this time? we're gonna start a segment called Trish's Rant.
One that I can actually put out on the thing. Well, I'm sure nothing really comes to mind. I usually have something to rant about the film, but I'm relatively quiet for this episode.
Yeah. Well, how about some informational stuff about
Well, Mythmoot's coming up, so our call for papers for Mythmoot, which is something new we're doing. Last year we didn't have attendee-delivered papers at Mythmoot. This year we started that. We're being kind of ambitious at Mythmoot this year. Actually, there's a couple of things that we're kind of doing new, and I'm a little nervous because it's like, gosh, you know, we should have just, like, done one thing new. We're doing three things new. But we have a full complement. We've got – I think the way things are looking right now – it looks like we're going to have concurrent paper sessions. What I mean by that, there'll be two, you know, at least two rooms going on at the same time, both of which have panels of probably three, at the most four presentations, and they'll be thematically related to one another. And we'll have one of those on Saturday afternoon. You know, we'll see the movie together on Saturday morning. We'll have like a over lunch kind of a first reaction from Corey and the VIP guests, and then we'll do our paper sessions. And then Sunday morning we'll also have paper sessions, or sometime Sunday we will. So we'll have actually two chunks of time where there'll be, you know, concurrent paper delivery sessions going on. And so I think we have. Or actually, I'll take that back. I think we may have three sessions going on concurrently.
Oh, great.
Because I think we have papers.
Yeah, I think we have like 18 proposals. And the cool thing is that we didn't close it down. You know, we didn't make the specification it has to be about The Hobbit or even about Tolkien. So we've ended up with some really interesting, you know, broad stuff. I mean, we've got somebody's proposed a paper on the fall of Arthur. Somebody's proposed a paper on, you know, well, actually, I don't know. Ryan's going to do either Sherlock Holmes or Dresden Files. I'm not sure which. Mm-hmm. I think we've got Dr. Who paper in here, you know. I mean, it's going to be really, really, really interesting. And we've got some really core you know, Tolkien stuff, some Tolkien versus Jackson movie stuff. So it's going to be I think it's going to be really hard to pick, frankly, what sessions to go to.
Yeah.
Excited about that thing. And I'm really thrilled with the response we've gotten. You know, that I think, you know, this was going to, when we first started out with this call for papers, it was kind of like, what if we give a party and nobody comes? You know, what if we do a call for papers and nobody responds? And mm-hmm. we've had just great response. So that's I'm really, really, really excited. Yeah, it's going to be a great myth mood. It's the weekend of, I think it's the 14th, 15th. It's that weekend, December. So things are shaping up. We haven't gotten a venue yet, but hopefully that will be rectified. We're still looking around the Baltimore area. But I can promise that, you know, my intent is if not before, for sure by, you know, by the week after Labor Day, which in the U.S. is the first week the first weekend after the beginning of September, we will have a venue because I know people need to make their arrangements, especially those coming from far away, and we'll have all that information. So hopefully, Knockwood will be able to, you know, we're kind of up against it because a lot of the venues we've gone to have holiday parties. You know, that's right in the holiday mm-hmm. party section.
Yeah.
So we will. Nothing else will. You know, we'll. I don't know. We'll have it. You know, like in a park. Miss Mood.
We'll have it at Scott Holbrook's house.
There you go.
We'll have it at Verlyn Flieger's house. She'd love that.
She's a big not fan of the movie.
Yeah. And then there's also a fundraiser going on for the Mythgard Institute.
Corey has put together a crowdfunding, you know, people have heard like a Kickstarter and those kinds of things, this particular it's called Indiegogo is the site. And it is actually an internet, you know, I guess, I don't know if Kickstarters or not, but this is one that's like more international based and mm-hmm. I guess has like a lot of nonprofits. And so, and I don't even have the URL here, but it is up on the Tolkien Professor page. There is a post about it and it's not too deep in the stream. There's a goal of $10,000 crowdfunding. And what you do is if, you know, there's different levels. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like a pledge drive, you know, where at whatever level you donate at, you get certain things like a mug and a bag. And, you know, there's other amenities. In fact, as you get higher up in the number of dollars that you put in, the whole deal here is about being able to offer free classes. So the donations aren't about giving money to Mythgard Institute to continue to offer classes that people pay for. This is you're giving money into Mythgard Institute to allow Corey to provide free classes of the same caliber as what he's, you know, been.
Yes. Giving. And it's actually the Mythgard Academy. So it's a little different than the Mythgard Institute because it's going to be free classes that are free and open to everybody. Yeah.
Everybody, which I think is really exciting.
Yep.
And it without, you know, of quality.
Yep.
And so it's
kind of like
the podcast that he's great, making them live classes.
Yeah. We have, right now, the goal is $10,000 and he's raised $6,855 of that already. So that's really nice. Now I do have the website. It's www.indiegogo.com /projects/the-mythgard-institute. So the-Mythgard-Institute. You could probably just search, go to Indiegogo and search the Mythgard Institute, and that would come up. So, but there's some really neat things that you can get. You know, if you donate $100 or more, you get to be on the Council of the Wise, the group of people who can nominate class ideas and decide on the final group of class options that will be presented to our supporters for a vote. So That's the one that, that's what intrigues me. I think I want to be on the council.
Yeah.
Especially if I can, you know, if I can be Galadriel, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, well, that's the only girl choice, isn't it? We don't have any other girls on the Council of the Wise.
Pretty much not. Well, actually, pretty much not, yeah. Well, we don't know about the wizards. The other wizards, the blue wizards, I'm not sure. I don't think they were on the Council of the Wise, if they showed up, they probably would be invited.
And the cool part is it goes as low as $5. So, I mean, even just $5 I need to sound like a pledge drive here, but I think it's great. You know, it's not even just the fact that it's Tolkien-based courses, which that alone is great. But the thing, and I've said this before, and I know Dave has too, it's a new educational model that Corey's up to here. You know, it's not just the content. It's the delivery. It's the way that education is being shared. And that, to me, is really the
most exciting. Yeah, it's not an exclusive club like academia has been for so long.
Right.
You know, this is something to be shared with everyone who has an interest in it. You know, not just a few people who can afford it, but everyone who's interested and wants to get in on the discussion.
And Tolkien is such a good starting point, too. I mean, I can say this from I've been a Tolkien fan for, oh, my gosh. I mean, I hate to even say, well over, I mean, probably close to 40 years. I mean, it was what, like mid-60s or early 60s. I mean, 67, 68, something like that. But, you know, it really took me, it took me finding Corey for me to really start to delve into what really to me is the most fascinating thing about Tolkien's work, which is, you know, some of the derivations, in other words, where he pulled from, you know, how this thing has gone, you know, it was not just his whole lifetime, but his son's whole lifetime too,
mm-hmm.
and the amount of detail he went. You know, I think if it hadn't been for the Silmarillion seminar, I still wouldn't have finished the Silmarillion. You know, I mean, but you have to do it. You have to get through the Silmarillion and really understand it in a way before you can really understand Tolkien. So that's the thing. I mean, there's so much more to Tolkien and Tolkien's works that you really do need to have somebody almost, you know, be a tour guide for you.
Yes.
Of course, mm-hmm. Halibur to get. And the group, and also the group, like for example, I don't think the Silmarillion seminar would have been anywhere near as valuable to me if it hadn't been a group of you doing it. If it had been just Corey, it wouldn't have been the same. So,
that's right.
You know, this is a great topic. You know, Tolkien is a perfect topic to do this. And, you know, he's also the gateway to medieval literature and medieval works and other, you know, other fantasy writers, you mm-hmm. know, so it's just, it's a great starting point for a lot of other things.
Yeah. There's a lot to learn. There's history, theology, philology. There's a lot of gateways that you can go to, starting with Tolkien and ending up other places. So
I just think this, and all ages, you know, this is also something for all ages, which is something I also like. So anyway, I'm just obviously a huge fan of this. I think anybody who is into this, even if you don't end up, you know, listening to it, but it's something that you want to support as far as an educational model, you know, come in, chip in at a $5, $10, $25 level. I mean, it all helps. And I'm thrilled to see him be so far along in the campaign this early. I'm hoping that Indiegogo gives him the opportunity to up his goal, you know, so that when we hit 10,000.
Can up it a little bit. Yeah, and it goes until September 26th. So.
Yeah.
So
the
okay.
Other thing, students are up to things, too, with this. And, you know, we don't want to talk about those now, but maybe in another digest we'll have them far enough the line that we can talk about it. So.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and take us out. Thanks for listening, everybody, and Godspeed. Mm-hmm.